Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Simon Barrett, and I will be your host today. This is another in our ongoing series, The Week in Reviews, a chance to sit down one-on-one with someone in the literary world. My guest today is author Reynold Conger, who has just published his debut novel, Chased Across Australia, and I have to admit, he has done an excellent job. Reynold, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you. Thank you for the introduction and the compliment.
Maybe we could start with a little bit of biographical stuff. Who is Reynold Conger?
Well, I am a trained as a scientist and an engineer. And after I retired from industry, I taught school for 8 years. And now I am fully retired, and I am getting a retirement career going, writing books.
Okay, you have piqued my interest. A scientist, if my research is correct, you're involved in the you were involved in the paper industry.
That's correct. I spent 30 years in the paper industry.
Huh. So you have finally taken the leap of from producing paper to writing on it.
To using it, yeah. Yeah, and it's amazing. 20 years ago, they predicted we'd stop using paper because of all the electronics, and now I think we use more because of the electronics.
I remember reading lots of articles about the paperless society, and yet we seem to be absolutely drowning in the stuff.
Well, sure, you get an email right away, you print a copy.
I found a way to stop my wife doing that. It was actually quite simple. Just don't refill the ink cartridges in your printer. Okay, I am joking on that one. Well, you're also a high school teacher. What did you? What subjects did you teach?
Well, I was certified as a science teacher, and also as a math teacher. Most of the time, I taught math, but I did teach some general science and some chemistry.
That could open up a days long conversation about the state of education in our country, but I won't go there. I'll just move on at this point. A question that I always love to ask first-time authors, what made you want to get into the book business?
Well, I'm one of these guys that always told tall tales. And near the end of my career in the paper industry, I did some consulting. And find myself overseas without too much to do entertainment-wise, so I started writing fiction to entertain myself. For example, I found myself in Brazil with only 7 channels, and only one of those channels had English 1/3 of the time. I found myself in Tokyo, and everything was Japanese.
Did you start with short stories just to amuse yourself, or were you already engaged on a larger project?
Well, I had some inspiration for a couple of I started out with short stories, but they were ideas for larger projects, and they were really too big for short stories, the concept was. And about that time, one of our close friends died of Lou Gehrig's disease. And So part of my grieving process was to write a short story where she was the hero and got the romance she deserved and never got. And that led on to other things. I've written all sorts of stories.
Okay, let's talk about your new book, Chased Across America. Oh, sorry, Chased Across
Australia.
Without giving any spoilers away, because I hate spoilers, you know, as a book reviewer, I go out of my way never, ever to give the game away. Can you tell us a little bit about the plot?
Well, Jack and Jill are a pair of typical Americans who just happen to be looking for a way to celebrate their 30th anniversary. And since their son is stationed in Australia, they decide they'll go to Australia during Jack's school vacation. He's a teacher. He's also a soccer coach. And when his team wins the state championship, the team gives him a brand new laptop with a World Cup soccer sticker on it. Well, the plot of the story is that the Islamic terrorists want to have an explode a dirty bomb in Sydney, and their courier is carrying special information to Australia using the same brand of and model of laptop with the same World Cup sticker on it. And en route to Australia, files get put on the wrong computer. And so the whole rest of the story are these villains trying to catch up with Jack and Jill so they can recover their files from the computer.
I it's been my experience that authors tend to base their characters on real people. More often than not, they'll take the traits of several people and merge them together. And I am guessing, in fact, I'm not a gambling man, but I'd put a dollar on it that there are bits and pieces of you and your wife in Jack and Jill Higgins.
Well, yes, I think all authors use people's characteristics for their characters, and usually it's a composite. In this particular case, I guess I owe you a dollar, because definitely I modeled the hero and heroine after myself and my wife, partly because the book springs out of an anniversary trip we took on our 40th anniversary to Australia. And so, it sort of starts out using some of our thoughts and things. And, of course, as you said, it's a composite. It's the best of our qualities plus the best of other people's qualities.
Okay, but you also have villains in the story.
You have to have villains.
No book is complete without a good few villains. Did you model the villains on the bad traits of people you know?
Not quite as much, but to some extent. I've got a few friends who, or I should say acquaintances, who would make good villains.
I can't wait to... Wait to hear what happens when they read the book and they go, "Oh no, that's me."
Well, that's their problem.
Actually, a funny story that has nothing whatsoever to do with your book. I'm working with an author at the moment who has decided to include a new character in his latest work, one Simeon Baronet.
Interesting.
Yeah. Yes, we have had several words over it.
part of writing my book is that we did spend a month in Australia, just like the main characters here. The difference is, of course, we weren't chased by villains, but we had a perfectly lovely time in Australia, and so the path followed by the heroes in the book is very close to the same path we took traveling on a pleasure trip across Australia. And in fact, I illustrated the book by inserting 8 photos that I had taken in Australia during our trip.
Yeah, and I do want to return to that theme. But before we do, let's talk a little bit about the role of soccer in the story. It's not a big part of the overall story, but it's very much a key component in establishing the plot.
Glue for the plot.
Right. Because I'm
a soccer fan because I spent a lot of time overseas, and what else do you see on TV in South America but soccer? I enjoy soccer. I've never played it seriously myself, but the plot. You see, the soccer sort of ties things together because soccer is the reason why Jack has a computer, a new computer, a new laptop. It's why he has the same sticker on it that the villain has on his laptop. Everybody keeps saying, "Oh, you can't be an American. You coach soccer." Well, soccer is getting very popular in high schools these days, and soccer is extremely popular over in Australia.
Right. Yes, it certainly is. And, of course, Australian rules football.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, I intentionally avoided that.
Oh.
I didn't want to get confused with American football.
Oh,
but,
there would be no confusion.
Well, my son, when he was over there, was... actually bought season tickets to one of the local football Australian style football teams. They thought it was great, but for the sake of the book, I just stuck with soccer, and we went through with that.
Well, let's do some harmless commercialization for a moment. I really enjoyed Chase the Cross Australia. Where can people buy it?
Okay, well, it is available through all of the general booksellers such as Barnes & Noble, Amazon, people like that. Ingram carries it as a distributor. It is available on my website, which is congerbooks.info. It is available through a website, chasedacrossaconger.com, and you could go in and pester your local bookstore too, I suppose.
Well, if it's carried by Ingram's, yes, you can. You can walk into your local bookstore and say, "Where is Chased Across Australia?" And they'll say, "Oh, it's out of stock right now, but we can get it for you." Yeah, it's just too hot to keep on the shelves.
Well, as a matter of fact, I walked into one of our local bookstores and said, "Hi, have you got Chase Across the Shores?" And they said, "No." They didn't even know about it. I said, "Well, I'm the author. Here's the ISBN number." Oh, and they ordered 10 copies.
Hey, that's great. I mean, that is what I call being proactive. What sort of reader feedback are you getting?
Well, I've had very positive comments from just about everybody except my brother-in-law. And, he's sort of a sourpuss, I guess. he says pretty good story, but way too much sex.
he might be listening.
And I intentionally wrote it so that the only sex in there is between married couples, and even that I don't get into hot and heavy details. I pretty much leave it in the background. But it's there.
One of the things I enjoy about the way that you put this book together is that you managed to avoid a lot of blood and gore, bad language, and sex. And I honestly believe that there's just way too much of it in many of today's books.
Well, that's my philosophy too. My feeling is that we can probably imagine a much more vivid picture than I can put into words. So if I suggest that a car rolls off the cliff into the ocean, your mind probably has a lot better word picture in it than if I say it went over and it bumped on the rocks going down with a clankety clank and a scream and a, And in fact, I think a lot of our movies probably would do better if they didn't have quite so many special effects, just enough to show you the car going over and let your and maybe see it at the bottom and let your imagination take over. As far as the profanity, I had been trained that profanity is sort of a weakness in the language, and I, of course, at the time I said, "Dah," but I've come to believe that I can write better without intentionally putting profanity in. Now, there are times when, I've got a villain or even a good character that has salty language, but rather than using some of the expletives that are offensive, I will tone that down to a hell or a damn.
Right.
Which some people find offensive enough. But the point is that gets across is that, this guy's excited. But I don't have to have him going, blah, 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 blah.
Right. It's something that I was grown up with. You don't need to use profanity. It shows a lack of vocabulary. You can be far ruder using clean language.
Oh, certainly, certainly. And in fact, in my opinion, the only place even mild profanity should be in literature is for dialogue. And that only where, you can't have somebody out of the ghettos speaking like a Harvard professor.
Yes, indeed. But there's also the aspect of tying in real life. And again, this is completely off topic. It was probably a year ago. I was sat outside reading a book, and three little kids are walking down the street, and a car drives by blasting one of those horrible, horrible, horrible rap songs, and the kids start singing along, and it was not pretty language, shall we just say that?
Well, and my high school students, when I was teaching high school, would, and I think they were doing it because they thought it was expected, they were inserting profanity into what they were saying to the point where it didn't mean anything.
Right.
They would use a profane word as an adjective for good and for and the same word for bad.
Yes. Yeah, I won't get into that discussion, but that there are certain words that I can think of that you know can be used as verbs, nouns, adverbs, you know, right? And they're all completely meaningless. As I mentioned in my review, I read Chased Across Australia, and to me, it's really three books in one. It's part thriller. It is, as you've already mentioned, part travelogue. And I view the third part as, I'm not sure that I've got the right wording here, a personal spiritual quest. Was it planned that way, or was that just happenstance?
A little bit of both. I write from a Christian perspective, and that's why there's a certain number of characters in my book who are Christians who behave like Christians. And so obviously these people, when they meet somebody like the villains, will witness to them. By witnessing, I mean they'll give the gospel message. And the plot, without giving a spoiler here, the plot requires the villains to have heard the gospel message. And so the characters give bits and pieces throughout the story. And you know, it's just the way I write, and also what was needed for a good plot.
Right. So I'll rephrase my question. It was on purpose.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. It was on purpose, but the story sort of invited it.
Oh, and you're right. It does. I think there are some truly delightful moments. What ones that I certainly couldn't have written myself. Chased, I mentioned that Chased Across Australia is part travelogue of your vacation, and I want to go completely off topic for a moment. In the mid 70s, I was absolutely desperate to escape from England. I hated the place, and you can probably tell by my accent. Yeah, I've spent a little while there. And my first wife and I actually planned on moving to Australia. We went through the whole process. However, I went on a business trip to Chicago that actually resulted in me moving to North America. And this suited me fine because I'd worked with a number of Australians in London, and I'd kind of developed the impression that Australia was very much a man's country, and the Sheilas, as you know, they're known as, were somewhat subservient, and that bothered me. I'd love to know your views as a person that has spent some time there.
Well, I think you're half right. It is a man's country. But the Sheilas are tough. And while it may appear that they're being subservient, I think the average Sheila is out there with her man. Whether it's in the middle of Sydney having cocktails, or whether she's out in the outback rounding up cattle. And I found the people that we met there absolutely wonderful. As I say, the women tend to be a lot more down-to-earth and realistic and, when necessary, tough than a lot of American and British women are. It's just, on the other hand, I've got some Australian friends that, even though they love their wives dearly, and they've got wives that are very tomboyish wives, I mean, there's no question who's in control in their household, sort of thing. And,
but there is no doubt who wears the skirts in the house.
But it's a very interesting society. They are definitely looking for people to immigrate there because they need population. But, of course, at the moment, the problem is that they've got all of the, quote, boat people trying to immigrate there, and they want quality immigrants, not people that are being washed ashore because they think they're being politically persecuted somewhere.
You mentioned that your the reason for your vacation was to visit your son. Is Australia home to him?
Well, no. He's a design engineer, mechanical engineer, and at that time he had been transferred to the Sydney plant. Actually, it's just outside of Sydney in Australia. And he worked there for 3 or 4 years before being moved on to France, and now he's back in the United States.
Ooh, he must love to travel.
Well, I hope so. He gets a lot of it in. But his company makes oil exploration equipment, so an awful lot of his travel is small boats on the North Sea, and he definitely doesn't enjoy that.
Right. Okay, back to the world of books. I view writing a book as being a three-step process, and each step gets progressively more difficult and more frustrating. You got to write the thing in the beginning, and that's pretty darn hard. Publishing it is even harder still. And then you reach the dreaded M word, M for marketing.
Where I am right now.
So what are your plans here? Are you doing book signings, that kind of thing?
Well, at this moment, I'm reaching out. I'm getting reviews. I've got a blog. I've got a couple of these web pages. I am trying to get out and do some lectures and things like that. And I have just had a second book accepted by a publisher. So next spring sometime that will be released, and hopefully there'll be a little bit of synergism there between the two books.
Okay, now my ears perk up. I don't have a copy of your book right in front of me, but I'm pretty certain it was published or self-published. Am I correct?
It was self-published, and it was self-published through Ex Libris, and they're one of these companies that provides the printing service, basically. They do editing, printing, and actually did a pretty good job on that part of doing it.
I think they did a bang up job. And
I really like the cover they gave me.
Right. And anyone that doubts the worth of print on demand or self publishing, call it what you will, is completely wrong. It's changed a lot. But then you mentioned that You have a second book that's just been accepted. Now, I need to know more.
Well, Tate, probably, of course, you know, one of the things an author does is keep sending manuscripts out, even though half of them get reject notices and the other half you never get any notice back. So you keep sending out queries and queries, and by golly, the other day I get an email saying, we like your book, attached as a contract. And I'm going, what book? So, because I'd sent this and other people all sorts of different manuscripts, so I bite my tongue and send an email back to this acquisitions editor saying, which manuscript are you working with? Then he gave me the name of the manuscript, and the working title is My Knight in Shining Armor. And so I signed the contract, and it's a go right now. Obviously, they may change the title before spring, but it is it's a Vietnam-era romance all about a college girl who meets this fantastic guy, except after a couple dates, she decides he's not very fantastic because he's just a dull engineer, and he doesn't dress stylishly, and his frat brothers play games like who knows more digits of pi and things like that. So she drops
him. Oh, man.
Well, 10 years later, she's still looking for her white knight. She's looking for the perfect guy. And she encounters him. This, by now, he's missing an ear because he lost an ear in Vietnam. And but she, that's okay. She's got this rich financier who she's engaged to and the whole works, but, well, he likes his business better than he likes her and keeps deserting her at such things as her as their engagement reception. And things click between her and George, and she ends up marrying the guy with one ear.
You know, pie, you mentioned it, and I don't think you were talking about apple pie. Sure signs that your characters might indeed reflect Reynold Conger once again.
Well, no, in that case, there is, it reflects a real student. In fact, there was a real George who was a classmate of mine. He was an engineering student. I was a chemistry student. He was a year ahead of me, but we both graduated the same year. By the time, let's see, we graduated in June. By February of the following year, there was an obituary for him in the Alumni News. Second Lieutenant George Stivers, killed in action in Vietnam.
Oh, dear.
So it's inspired by a real, real character. And I mean, I've done as much as I could to put this guy's sense of humor in and everything like that.
One of the reasons I became a reviewer was I would read a book and always have questions. And that's why I love to talk to authors, because so much of what they write is about reality in one way or another.
Even these people that are writing science fiction and things like that have to base it on reality. Now, in science fiction, you're allowed to set up your own reality. But the point is, you have to be consistent with that reality. So if you allow people to fly, well, then everybody's got to be able to fly or have a good reason why they can't.
Right. But, you know, science fiction isn't my favorite genre, but I've read some exceptionally well-done ones. And they all have their roots in reality in some form or another. And Quite often, it's more of a spiritual aspect.
Sometimes. Well, I'm thinking in particular, I read a short science fiction story about an astronaut who, in the future, who's on his way back from visiting some who knows what. Well, I guess it was the debris of a nebula. And he's all despondent and really questioning everything. And at the very end, you find out the reason he's questioning things is because he found evidence that there was a Earth-size planet that orbited around this star that blew up, and it had life on it, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And when he looks at the date for the nebula exploding and then allowing for time for the light to reach the Earth, that's the nativity star.
Reynold, I'm looking at the time, and I've got my producer whining in my ear. We're flat out of time, but I want to thank you for joining me today to talk about Chased Across Australia, and I want to also wish you every success with
well, thank you very much.
Yeah, and I do hope that when the project nears completion, you will keep in touch. I would love to read this.
I certainly will.
Okay, Reynold, have yourself a wonderful day. Be happy, healthy, and safe. And until next time, this is Simon Barrett wishing everyone a great day. Till next time, goodbye.
Okay, you still there, Simon?